Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 29th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, DPS releases final mass shooting report. Report identifies 24 crime scenes, 45 people who were shot at in 2019. By Caitlin Randall. Shortly after the two-year mark of the Midland-Odessa mass shooting that left 7 dead and 25 wounded, the Texas Department of Public Safety released their final report, which included the gunman's route and a list of crime scenes. In the days following Seth Ator's hour-long shooting spree on August 31, 2019, investigators recovered 63 rounds of fired ammunition and identified 24 crime scenes, according to the report released last week. DPS states that there were likely more rounds of ammunition that were never recovered. The FBI and Odessa Police Department used video surveillance footage and 911 call data to piece together Ator's route, according to the DPS report. The shooting began in Midland on West Loop 250 at the Interstate 20 service road when Ator was pulled over by DPS troopers. Ator evaded the officers and continued on I-20 before heading northbound on Loop 338 in Odessa. He drove intermittently on Loop 338 and State Highway 191 and turned several times to drive down commercial driveways. Ator then turned onto John Ben Shepherd Parkway before beginning a seemingly haphazard course through residential streets that included Maple Avenue, Grandview Avenue, Everglade Avenue, Adams Avenue, Walnut Street, and more. There was a 4-minute period when officials were unable to locate Ator's vehicle before he reappeared on Yukon Road. Ator drove south on Faudry Road, then again on State Highway 191, into the driveway of Medical Center, ProCare, and outside Synergy Cinemas in Odessa, where he was shot and killed by law enforcement. During the hour Ator drove through Midland and Odessa, he shot at 45 people who were identified in the report. About a dozen of those individuals were not injured, but were targeted by gunfire. There were 12 locations along I-20 that were identified as crime scenes. The other crime scenes reported by authorities were Twin Peaks Olive Garden, Freedom Motors, and Market Street Grocery on 42nd Street. 3600 block of Walnut Street, intersection of State Highway 191 and Loop 338, intersection of Yukon Road and Grandview Avenue, 3600 block of Adams Avenue, Odessa Regional Medical Center, Hobby Lobby on University Avenue, Stripes Convenience Store on State Highway 191, Synergy Cinemas. Ator had one .223 semi-automatic rifle on his person when he was killed by law enforcement, as well as 58 rounds of ammunition remaining, according to the report. The DPS report also detailed Ator's numerous run-ins with police and psychological evaluations since he was a child. When he was 11 years old, Ator was interviewed by Amarillo police after pulling a knife on a group of girls at a park and saying he was going to stab one of them. When he was 17, Ator was a suspect in a theft and possible strong-armed robbery. In 2001, when Ator was 18 years old, police responded several times after he threatened to kill his ex-girlfriend's family, then kill himself. Ator was also listed as the victim of assaults in some reports after getting into verbal altercations. In one 2010 incident, Ator was reportedly assaulted by several black men after provoking them by saying, "This isn't H-Town. Why don't you go back to Houston?" The incident that law enforcement officials found most disturbing came in 2011 when Ator allegedly made statements to his family during a paranoid episode that he planned to die in a shootout with police. He was taken into custody and admitted to a facility for mental health treatment. Amarillo police took photos of Ator's residence for the SWAT team in case there were future incidents. Ator was evaluated by mental health professionals several times, including three times in 2006. During one of those evaluations, a doctor reportedly wrote that Ator was a danger to himself and others, and that the consequences would be deadly if he did not take a combination of antidepressants, antipsychotics, anti-anxiety drugs, sedatives, and hypnotics. This article is entitled, Capital Murder Suspect Taken into Custody. The 29-year-old man was wanted for his role in a shooting. By the Midland Reporter-Telegram. A Midland man was taken into custody Tuesday by New Mexico State Police after a warrant was issued for capital murder related to a shooting that occurred Monday in Midland. The Midland Police reported Tuesday that a warrant had been issued for Keon Javon Lewis, 29, for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and capital murder. Lewis was wanted for his role in a shooting that took place Monday afternoon in the 3400 block of North Midland Drive. Midland police reported that they responded to that area of Northwest Midland where they discovered a female, identified as 28-year-old Treve Jackson, deceased with multiple gunshot wounds inside her apartment. MPD also reported that an adult male also sustained a gunshot wound and was transported to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The Midland Police Department Crimes Against Persons Detectives and Crime Scene Unit were notified and responded to the scene. During the course of the investigation, Lewis was positively identified as the person who killed Jackson and shot the adult male. Next of kin has been notified, and the investigation is ongoing, according to police. This article is entitled, Longtime MRT Associate Will Be Remembered as Ultimate Professional, by Stuart Doreen. The executive assistant to five Reporter-Telegram publishers and one of the most loyal employees that the newspaper will ever know passed away at the age of 90. Betty Stoltz Simmons, whose time at the Reporter-Telegram predated the purchase of the newspaper by Hearst, came to the Reporter-Telegram working for the iconic Allison family, including James N. Allison Sr., in 1948 until his death in 1975. She then served his son, James Jimmy N. Allison Jr., until his 1978 death. Betty Simmons was as much a part of the Allison family as anyone, Jay Allison stated in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. She was a confidant, advisor, and friend to both my grandfather and father. They probably relied on her more than anyone at the newspaper. She was ingrained in the fabric of the newspaper and will be greatly missed. Following Hearst's purchase of the Reporter-Telegram, Betty trained a trio of newspaper executives, Bill Thomas, George Irish, and Charles Spence, until her 2007 retirement. Betty Simmons is on my list of the five most remarkable people I have known during my newspaper career, stated Irish in an email. Irish currently serves as Eastern Director of the Hearst Foundations. Betty was smart and efficient and always provided a sense of humor in challenging situations. Betty had a keen sense of what was right and had no tolerance for anyone cutting corners. It was an honor to have known and worked with Betty Simmons. She came to the paper at the age of 17 and stayed 59 years, 1 year short of six complete decades. Spence described Simmons as the glue that held the executive offices together. When those meeting with the publisher entered the building, it was Simmons who made sure they were greeted and taken care of. Spence recalled that even then Governor George W. Bush wanted to give the legendary associate a big hug. She was a masterful professional who was dedicated to her work, to the publishers and the office, said Spence, who worked with Simmons for 25 years, including her last 23 years at the Reporter-Telegram. Over the years, Betty became known to legions of schoolchildren every year for her tours of the Reporter-Telegram building. She also showed that one was never too old to learn, achieving the remarkable feat of becoming the first octogenarian to graduate from Lubbock Christian University in May 2011. Her 22-year journey ended with Betty graduating magna cum laude in organizational management. That was from a report from the great Ed Todd, who also wrote, "Smart and sassy at age 80 and energetic in mind and body, Betty Stoltz-Simmons has emerged as a career college student without fanfare of her own making. Learning becomes her." "I just wanted a degree," Simmons said, according to Todd's report. Sadly, Simmons passed away around 3 years after James Edwin Ed Todd. Her passing is also the second this year of a legendary Reporter-Telegram figure, Ted Battles. Between the three, they combined for more than 120 years of demonstrated excellence. "They all represented the best in their business and the best in the newspaper business," Spence said. But today, it is our turn to say goodbye to Betty Simmons, an outstanding associate and one of the truly memorable, loyal, and dedicated professionals that sought to make the Reporter-Telegram the best it could be. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled "Midland Man Charged with Assaulting Officer" by Caitlin Randall. Calbert Calvin Thomas, 45, was arrested Sunday and charged with assault of a police officer as he allegedly punched a Midland Police Department officer while he was being detained for another crime. Officers responded to Renew Highland Park Apartments early Sunday morning after being dispatched for an assault call, according to Thomas's arrest affidavit. Thomas had left the scene, but later returned while officers were interviewing the complainant, the affidavit states. Thomas allegedly approached an officer screaming, "F you, dude," and proceeded to push and punch the officer. Following a scuffle with officers, Thomas was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital for medical clearance. He is currently being held at Midland County Jail on a $20,500 bond. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled "Natural Gas Extends Rally" by Gerson Freitas Jr., Bloomberg. Natural gas futures extended a massive rally in the U.S. as growing fears of a global supply crunch this winter drove speculative buying. Gas for October delivery surged as much as 10% and surpassed 6 million British thermal units for the first time in 7 years before pairing gains. The expiration of the October futures contract on Tuesday added fuel to the rally as traders closed out bearish positions ahead of the colder months. "It seems that all the shorts that needed to get out are out now," said Dennis Kistler, a senior vice president at Bach Financial Securities. The trader said he wouldn't feel comfortable holding $6 gas through October and November without any major weather events, though any correction in prices should continue to attract buyers until the winter threat is over. Prices for the heating and power generation fuel are skyrocketing globally amid mounting concern that inventories won't be able to meet demand in the Northern Hemisphere this winter. Supplies are particularly tight in Europe and Asia, but the U.S. is also facing potential constraints as exports rise and gas producers keep a lid on output in response to pressure from investors to reduce debt and boost share buybacks. "We've had a lot more spec buyers coming in," Gary Cunningham, director of market research at Tradition Energy, said in an interview. He added that $9 and $10 options for January and February are trading actively and at a big premium, suggesting the market has still upside, even though the supply-demand balance doesn't justify prices at those levels. The so-called widowmaker premium for gas delivered in March versus April, essentially a bet on how tight supplies of the fuel will be at the end of winter, has climbed to $1.458, the highest for this time since 2005. Energy prices are also surging in Europe, with Dutch front-month gas for futures climbing as much as 12% Tuesday. This article is entitled, OPEC Sees Demand Growth Unchecked by Climate Fight, by Grant Smith. OPEC sees oil demand continuing to grow to the middle of next decade, even as world leaders prepare for another attempt to avert catastrophic climate change. Global fuel consumption will fully recover from its pandemic slump by 2023 and will keep growing until it hits a plateau shortly after 2035, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries said in its latest long-term report. The forecast suggests scant expectation that the COP26 conference to be held in Glasgow, Scotland in just over 4 weeks will culminate in a quick pivot from fossil fuels. There are still considerable doubts as to whether all these ambitious climate mitigation commitments will be met in the proposed time frame, the organization's Vienna-based secretariat said. The group's members include the biggest Middle East crude producers. Global oil demand suffered an unprecedented slump last year as travel and economic activity were curbed by efforts to battle the coronavirus. OPEC forecasts that consumption will rebound above 100 million barrels a day in 2023 and continue to advance to 107.9 million a day in 2035. The projections are little changed from last year's report. OPEC's World Oil Outlook, published on Tuesday, echoes comments from group leader Saudi Arabia earlier this year that hopes to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050 by slashing fossil fuel investments are a la-la land fantasy. While the report acknowledges that renewables are the fastest growing energy source, it projects they will account for just 10% of the world's needs in 2045. Before the current energy crunch that's helped drive Brent crude above $80 a barrel and European natural gas prices to record highs, OPEC had started gradually restoring the output that it shuttered when the pandemic erupted last year. It expects to be a beneficiary of the coming revival in fuel use. Key juncture. The oil industry is at a critical juncture. Some energy companies and traders say the lack of spending on fossil fuel projects amid the fight against climate change will result in a supply shock, potentially driving oil prices even higher. On the other hand, governments, society, and investors are pushing companies to produce cleaner fuels. Made up of 13 nations that rely on petroleum sales to fund their budgets, OPEC is hardly a neutral observer. Others in the oil market, like the International Energy Agency and Total Energies SE, expect demand will hit a limit earlier, somewhere around the end of this decade. Demand for OPEC's combined crude oil and condensate supplies will climb from last year's 30.7 million barrels a day to 42.7 million in 2045, according to the report. Its share of world oil markets will expand from 33% currently to 39% by that year. However, the organization gave no separate projections for its crude production, the component it uses to balance world supply and demand. The group expects to initially face some competition from its key rival, the U.S. shale industry. American tight oil output will increase from last year's average of 11.5 million barrels a day to 14.8 million in 2026. But OPEC expects that growth in shale will taper off toward the end of the next decade, clearing the way for the organization The burden is expected to be on OPEC members to provide much of the oil to meet the world's needs, it said in the report. This article is entitled Markets Face Day of Superlatives by Peyton Forte and Vildana Hadrick, Bloomberg. It was a wild day for markets Tuesday as traders digested news of supply chain breakdowns, rising treasury yields, and the U.S. nearing its debt limit. Oil touched a three-year high as demand continued to increase. Weather threats sent the price of cotton soaring. The yield on 10-year treasuries rose to 1.55%, prompting stock market traders to scurry away from assets with particularly stretched valuations like technology stocks. The NASDAQ 100 and NASDAQ Composite Indexes suffered their biggest drops since March. Anytime we see the 10-year UST yield move such a dramatic amount in a short period of time, especially off of low starting levels, it generally coincides with a market sell-off of some magnitude, said Brian Price, head of investment management for Commonwealth Financial Network. These were among the moves that turned heads Tuesday. Sinking markets. The S&P 500 was down as much as 2.2%, headed toward its 100-day average and its worst month in a year. Microsoft Corporation contributed the most to the index decline, falling as much as 3.9%. The tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 also suffered, dropping 2.9% at one point. Among the many problems worrying markets, both Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen testified before the U.S. Senate and warned that a U.S. default due to a failure to raise the debt ceiling would have catastrophic consequences for the dollar. Treasuries hit. Yields on a 30-year Treasuries surged as much as 11 basis points. That slammed the $17 billion iShares 20-plus year Treasury bond ETF, ticker TLT, which at one point plunged to its lowest level since June. The ETF, which tracks treasuries maturing in 20 years or more, is on track for its worst monthly performance since March as investors recalibrate the expected path of monetary policy after last week's Federal Reserve meeting. Oil surges. Oil prices have been climbing as recovering economies are causing demand to run ahead of supply and depleted inventories. Brent crude topped $80 a barrel Tuesday, its highest level in 3 years, though it fell back in the face of the equity sell-off. West Texas Intermediate hovered near $75 a barrel after breaching $76 overnight. Cotton's breakthrough. Cotton futures on Tuesday broke the $1 a pound mark as supply worries drive up costs for the fiber. Cotton hasn't been this expensive since November 2011. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled Voters Will Get to Ratify County's Business Plan by Stuart Doreen, editor. If we're going to be in the cemetery business, we need to get in it with both feet. Those were the words of County Judge Terry Johnson at Monday's Commissioner's Court meeting, and he was right. While it may be a head-scratcher for some, the county basically has no choice but to make sure that the Fairview Cemetery is more presentable than it is today. After all, through no fault of the current court, the county is in the cemetery business. Johnson's comments are relevant for all government entities. When the school district bought apartments or set up housing for employees, it got in the housing business. When the county decided to pump millions of dollars into new libraries, it remained in the library business. By virtue of council and commissioners' court votes to approve around $90 million in spending for the Bush Convention Center and Horseshoe, respectively, the city and county put our communities in the convention business for decades to come. And when you get in any business, you must jump in with both feet. In November, some county residents, those living outside the city, will go to the polls to vote on an initiative that will raise the sales tax rate in the county. It could raise tens of millions of dollars, maybe as much as $80 million, according to Johnson in previous reports, annually for Midland County. Some leaders have said this will help keep the property tax rate low. That is likely going to be true, but it also will likely put the county in business. A previous county meeting indicated the following business opportunities: the maintenance of libraries business, recreational facilities business, the updating of jail facilities business, maintenance of roads and highways business, ambulance services in Greenwood business, and parks business. That is a lot of business. According to Johnson's comment, another item on the county budget Monday was number 51, discuss and take action on mailer to county residents explaining county assistance district. The minute I saw this, I thought back to the Midland ISD bond election, where the school district spent taxpayer money on items to help explain the $569 million bond issue. Thankfully, commissioners decided not to act on this agenda item. I think we could all support someone doing that on their own dime. No matter what happens on the mailer front, here's what county leaders need to know with this election. No matter what residents think of the tax or the possible unprecedented growth in government, it could allow this tax increase, like any other before it, is only as good as the government that oversees it. If voters living outside the city but inside the county have a positive view of how county commissioners can handle excess funds, then I would expect them to vote yes. If that view is negative, then it will fail. It is no different than any other tax election in that they are typically a referendum on a plan or leadership or ratification of a business plan. We will see if voters are willing to jump in with both feet. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, September 29th. Betty Jean Simmons. Betty Jean Simmons, 90, passed away on September 25th at Faith Presbyterian Hospice in Dallas. She was born on December 30, 1930, to O.L. Happ and Essie Emily Forrest Stoltz. Betty was married to Orrin Simmons, and they had one son, Dale Simmons. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, and one of her sisters, Irene Tutt Stoltz-Rotan. Those left to cherish Betty's memories are her son, Dale Simmons of Midland, her sister, Freddie Stoltz-Locks, and her husband, Norman of Irving, and numerous nieces and nephews. Graveside services will be at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. Billy Brooks, Bill Phillips. Billy Brooks, Bill Phillips, passed away on September 27th at his home in Midland. He was born on April 21st, 1929, in Sayre, Oklahoma. Bill is predeceased by his parents. He was an only child. He is survived by Yvonne Phillips, his wife of 68 years, and numerous cousins. Memorials may be made to Grace Presbyterian Church, Midland, or a charity of your choice. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, September 30th, at Grace Presbyterian Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Eliseo Che Larez Robledo. Eliseo Che Larez Robledo was received with open arms by our Heavenly Father, and once again, as when he was born into the arms of his parents, Jesus Kariki Robledo and Tomasa Larez Robledo, on November 17th, after his toughest battle with COVID. Che is preceded in death by his parents, Jesus and Tomasa Robledo, grandparents Juanita Rodriguez and Ramondo Larez, Jose and Francisco Robledo, and most recently his brother and sister-in-law, Freddie and Lily. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, September 30th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church and Shrine. Mass of Christian Burial will be held on Friday, October 1st at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Maria Socorro Leon Nonola. Maria Socorro Leon Nonola, 85, of San Angelo, died September 24th. Mrs. Nonola was born to Natividad and Adela Leon on August 6, 1936, in Presidio, Texas. Socorro married Santiago Nonola Sr. on November 24, 1956, in Midland. Survivors include her daughter, Rachel Navarro, Jerry, and son, Santiago James Nonola, all of San Angelo. Five sisters, two brothers, two grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Santiago Nonola Sr., her parents, Natividad and Alela Leon, a son, Sammy Nonola, a sister, Valentina Hernandez, and four brothers. Viewing will be held on Thursday, September 30th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., a prayer service at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. The funeral service will be held on Friday, October 1st at 10 a.m. at Iglesia Bautista Montesina with Pastor Ben Chavez. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Tammy Adair Dennis. Tammy Adair Dennis, 55, of Midland, passed away Friday, September 24th. The family will receive friends on Thursday, September 30th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held on Friday, October 1st at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery. Tammy was born on September 20th, 1966 to Tony and Judy Adair in Crane. She is survived by her husband, Jeff Dennis of Midland, son Jeffrey Dennis of Denver, daughter Molly Dennis, parents Tony and Judy Adair, brother Bobby Adair, all of Midland. She is also survived by nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her grandparents, Charles and Maureen LaFon, D.G. and Fern Adair, and by her father and mother-in-law, Arthur E. and Joe Dennis. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Cynthia K. Cornelius. This is to inform you that Cynthia K. Cornelius of Dallas passed away on Saturday, September 25th at the age of 66. Services are pending with Laurel Land Funeral Home of Dallas. James Eric Trevino. James Eric Trevino, 29, passed away September 19th. Rosary will be Friday, September 24th at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. A private family viewing will be held. He is survived by his wife, Anna Trevino, four sons, Armando, Giovanni, James, and Adrian, his mother, Lucia Sanchez, his second mother, Yolanda Villarreal, one brother, Marcus Mihango, two sisters, Gloria Silva and Kim Garcia, and two nieces and one nephew. Santos Contreras. Santos Contreras, 57, passed away Sunday, September 26th. Private services will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Santos is survived by his wife, Leticia Contreras, three sons, Santos, Jesus, and Jonathan, four brothers, Jesus, Ricardo, Juan, and Felipe, four sisters, and 10 grandchildren.
This is Mackie, and I'll be reading to you today from Odessa American on Wednesday, September 29th, 2021. County to Seek Firm to Administer ARPA Funds by Federico Martinez. Ector County Commissioners on Tuesday voted unanimously and without comment to seek bids from consulting firms vying to serve as an administrator of the county's American Rescue Plan Act funds. Commissioners did not indicate a timeline for hiring a company, but their decision is another signal that they are unlikely to allocate requested funds to Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center to help the hospitals meet escalating costs due to COVID-19. Commissioners have not publicly mentioned the hospital's request since the county received $16 million in ARPA funds in August. On Monday, Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes questioned whether MCH and ORMC needed the funds. MCH has requested $7 from the county, ORMC $2.6 million. I'm not saying that I'm for or against giving funds to the hospitals, Hayes said. The hospitals have surely done much good and have been heroes during the community's struggle with COVID-19. But at some point, through the normal process, the question has to be asked, how much money do you need? The hired company would be responsible for vetting applications and recommending applicants for commissioners to choose from, Hayes said. The selected company would also conduct financial audits to make sure the money is used correctly. Hayes noted that both hospitals have already received millions of dollars in federal funding, and the city council recently allocated $3 million in ARPA funds to MCH and another $1 million to ORMC. They received a lot of money last year, and I believe they'll be getting more money in September, Hayes said. Several Odessa City Council members have expressed concern that the county has done very little to help the hospitals during the COVID pandemic. Councilman Steve Thompson recently pointed out that the city has repeatedly provided funds to help the hospitals and partnered with the hospitals to provide vaccinations and community outreach programs, while the county has mostly sat quietly on the sidelines for the past 2 years. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin and ORMC CEO Stacy Brown said the recent COVID spike has taxed both hospitals' resources and made it necessary to hire more medical staff, including nurses to care for COVID patients. Tippin said he went before the commissioners in the summer and detailed how the county could help the hospitals and still get that money back from FEMA. I know the court has not reached out since then, Tippin said. The judge has not reached out. We just keep pressing forward. Brown added that the ARPA funding from the city comes with a contract that requires both hospitals to see that the city has the paperwork needed to recover the funding they earmarked for the hospitals. It is absolute documentation of that, Brown said. Tippin said the city has set the standard for how to communicate with other entities. It's frustrating to have to rehash all this when there is no communication from the other side. The one thing that has remained consistent is that patients need us. Not just Odessa, but all the counties of West Texas. These are tax dollars. We are just trying to pump that into the taxpayer laying in the hospital bed. Commissioners on Tuesday unanimously approved the proposed county general fund operating budget of $66,615,862, with about $18.4 million in reserves. County commissioners also voted to maintain the current property tax of 0.365 for fiscal year 2021-22. The decision could increase or decrease overall property tax revenues based on whether property and mineral rates are higher or lower, Hayes has previously said. Many homeowners, however, have reported a higher appraisal this year. UTPB students sworn in as registrars by Ruth Campbell. 28 University of Texas Permian Basin Honor students were sworn in as deputy voter registrars Tuesday. Ector County Elections Office bilingual coordinator Amanda Snyder did the honors for one class each of freshmen and sophomores. UTPB Associate Professor of Arts Chris Stanley said the students can register anybody in Ector County. Associate Professor of Political Science Robert Perry also works on the yearly project, which started around 2015. Plans are to sign up students at Permian High School today at 8 a.m. The last day to register to vote is October 4th, Stanley said. He added that the Deputy Voter Registrar program is now a teamwork assessment as part of the honors program. It's worked quite well. We're hoping they become more engaged with that process for the rest of their lives, Stanley said. Sophomores Jaden Ramsey and Alexia Garcia are starting their second year of being deputy voter registrars. Ramsey said she likes going out into the community and making a difference. There are a lot of people that aren't registered to vote that never really think about registering to vote because they don't care. But then they're registered and they see an election and they're like, I'm going to go vote. And at least they have the option, Ramsey said. Garcia said being registered and voting gives people a voice, even if their candidate doesn't win. They know they tried to make a difference. Ramsey said she registered to vote when she was 17 years and 10 months old. I was very excited. I turned 18 in an election year. It was something else, Ramsey said. Stanley said they were specifically invited to go to Permian. Governor Greg Abbott recently signed Senate Bill 1 into law. The governor's office website says the bill creates uniform statewide voting hours, maintains and expands voting access for registered voters that need assistance, prohibits drive-through voting, and enhances transparency by authorizing poll watchers to observe more aspects of the election process. The bill also bans the distribution of unsolicited applications for mail-in ballots and gives voters with a defective mail-in ballot the opportunity to correct the defect. The Texas Tribune reported that the bill takes effect 3 months after the special session. Stanley said the legislation hasn't changed the voter registrar program. It's hard to say what the actuality is going to look like. I think our voters are already lined out for ID and for all these other things. And so I think, personally, a lot of the issues in the state have more to do with the larger urban centers. We have so many places to vote in Ector County that I don't see those issues hitting. And so, for the class, what's fascinating is, as we get closer to this next election in November, to watch that. One of the things that the sophomores got to do, which was so cool, is we had the Ector County Elections Office come and do a lecture on voter integrity in our county so that the students learned about what happens after the vote is cast from the polling place to the final count. I thought that was brilliant, and the elections officials did such an incredible job. So I would think that any group that's interested in those issues could ask the elections office, and they would be able to give that same presentation, Stanley added. He said it helps because you get the idea of how the voting process works once you cast your ballot. But as far as voting and Ector County, you know, I think we've done very, very well. You know, you haven't heard any of those national concerns, Stanley said. OC approves higher tax rate. The Odessa College Board of Trustees approved a total tax rate of 0.201723 per $100 valuation at their meeting Monday night. Hearings were held earlier this month. The tax rate is made up of 0.172599 per $100 valuation for maintenance and operations and 0.029124 per $100 valuation for debt service. The tax rate for 2020 was 0.188965 per $100 valuation. The rate that would have triggered an election was 0.214653 per $100 valuation. The total budget for this year is $74,588,000, which includes $53,223,726 in unrestricted funds and $21,365,139 in restricted funds. A bid from Hellas Construction for a total of $1,598,502 was approved for a new track and field complex. The track will have 8 lanes and accommodations for field activities. The track will be blue. This includes $27,427 for football goalposts and pads, soccer goals, 6% cement stabilization for $64,409, and curb replacement for the inside and outside, as well as asphalt maximum replacement cost. Cruz Castillo, president of JSA Architects, said this is a working design. The entry gates will include the letters OC, and there will be bleachers on the east and west side, and they are still figuring out where the press box will be. The board also approved diesel trucks and trailers for the truck driving programs. Purchased was a 2019 Peterbilt for $95,498 and a 2018 Peterbilt for $84,032. Elution Advise was added to OC's Elution contract. Executive Assistant to the President Ashley Warren said it would cost $78,400 to implement and the expected time is 8 to 10 months. Warren said it has a great communications component for students to improve persistence. Students can also use the software to set up appointments. The board also approved a letter of agreement between the OC Wrangler Club Incorporated and the college. The college website says the OC Wrangler Club is the official support organization for Odessa College Athletics. Its primary purpose is to solicit contributions from private sources to provide support for the Department of Intercollegiate Athletics. The college extended its agreement with Frost Bank by 2 years. President Gregory Williams reviewed events from the past few weeks. He noted that Brian Jones, Director of Professional Learning, has been named to the Texas Commission on Community College Finance. Nikki Brown, training coordinator for the Law Enforcement Training Academy, was named to the Texas Transfer Framework Field of Study Discipline Subcommittee for Criminal Justice. Groundbreaking on the track is set for 10 a.m. Thursday. Quick hits. Of the 18 COVID patients on ventilator, 5 are vaccinated, 12 unvaccinated, and 1 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients are 15 to 84 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 1 from Crane, 3 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Gardendale, 4 from Midland, 1 from Presidio. The rest are from Odessa or Ector County. Free COVID-19 testing. The City Incident Command and Curative are offering free COVID-19 testings from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at McKinney Park, 625 West Pool Road. Entrance will be on West Pool Road and west of South Sam Houston Avenue. PCR test results in 24 to 48 hours in most cases. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, the test will be free. Book an appointment at curative.com. COVID-19 Vaccination Clinic. The City of Odessa's COVID-19 Mass Vaccination Clinic will be again open from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. through Friday in the UTP parking lot. Enter the parking lot from 42nd Street and 191 Frontage Road. The city will be giving out the first dose, second dose, and Pfizer booster shots. To qualify for the booster, it has to have been at least 6 months since your last dose. Bring your vaccine card. The city can also look up your vaccine information on site if you don't have your card. A doctor's note for the Moderna booster shot is required. No appointment is needed. You may visit tinyurl.com. Honor Hispanic Outstanding Medical Professionals at noon, September 30th, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church Hall, 2633 Conover Drive. For more information, call Carol Uranga at 432-349-9840. Film documentary. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a film documentary, Latin American Women Artists. It is 27 minutes long and begins at 6:30 p.m. on September 30th. A discussion will follow. The admission is free. Visit noelartmuseum.org. Fall Sweep. Keep Odessa Beautiful has scheduled Fall Sweep community-wide cleanup event September 11th through November 20th. The first 10 groups to register get a KOB good bag. Register by September 30th to be guaranteed free KOB t-shirt at odessa.gov/458/annual-fall-sweep. For details, contact KOB at 432-335-4686 or email KOB@odessa-tx.gov. West Texas Fest. The Ellen Noel Art Museum has scheduled the 5th annual West Texas Fest, Spirits of Texas, October 1st at the Midland Shooters Association Shotgun Range at 7400 West County Road 170 in Midland. VIP/sponsor hour is 6 p.m. General admission is 7 p.m. and cornhole tournament will start at 7:45 p.m. There will be Texas beer, wine, and tastings alongside local food trucks, music, and cornhole tournament. Funds raised help the museum continue its mission in providing art exhibits, free community art days, educational programs, and much more for the Permian Basin. Sponsorships are available. Online ticket sales end at noon, October 1st. Attendees must be 21 years and older to attend. The shotgun range will be closed. To sponsor or for tickets, visit noelartmuseum.org/west-texas-fest. Garden Grants. The Texas Farm Bureau is offering $500 grants to help schools establish or improve gardens or greenhouses. Aquaponic and hydroponic systems are eligible if they are used to teach students about food production. Get the details at http tfb.us/gardengrant21. Apply by noon, October 22nd. Shell Livewire Accelerator begins business program. Shell Oil Company, in collaboration with Lyft Fund, is establishing its global flagship program, Shell Livewire, in the Permian Basin. The Shell Livewire Permian Basin pilot program is designed to equip aspiring entrepreneurs and existing small business owners with the technical, business, and soft skills needed to succeed. The Shell Livewire Accelerator is a 5-week business program focused on providing applicants with training, mentorship, funding, and marketing to help to boost their small business. It will include aspiring entrepreneurs and existing small business owners that live and do business in Ector, Loving, Midland, Reeves, Winkler, or Ward counties. Participants will receive the following benefits as a part of the program: 5 virtual business training sessions with experts, access to business tools, one-on-one business consultation, a professional video promo, cash prizes, mentorship and consulting services, a news release said. All classes are online. Click tinyurl.com/mx7t-wd6t for more information. When and where? Topic: Building Your Business. October 19th, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Topic: Funding Your Business. October 26th, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Topic: Connecting with Customers. November 2nd, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Topic: Managing Your Money. Tuesday, November 9th, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Topic: Telling Your Story. November 16th, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central Time. Topic: In-Person Graduation Showcase. December 14th, time and location to be determined. Obituaries. Ramona Diaz Torres. From Odessa, Ramona Diaz Torres, 74, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on Tuesday, September 21st, 2021, and joined her beloved husband, Primo, in heaven. Ramona was born in Taylor, Texas, on June 14th, 1947, to the late Joe and Lydia Diaz. Ramona is survived by her daughter, Melinda Vasquez, and husband, Johnny Allen Wright, Weatherford. Johnny Allen Wright, 73, passed away in the early morning hours on Friday, September 10th, 2021, in Weatherford, Texas. He was born March 19th, 1948, to Sidney Allen Wright and Velva Lee Pilkington Wright in Merkel, Texas. In addition to his parents, Johnny was preceded in death by his wife, Debbie Frances Rich Wright, daughter Tracy Villanueva, and brothers Larry Wright and Sid Wright. Johnny is survived by brothers Stacy and wife Quasha Wright and Glenn Knapp, sisters Frances Wright and husband Lonnie Hill, and Karen Knapp and 2 grandchildren. He will be interred at the Veterans State Cemetery in Abilene. Fuse. A visitation for Ramona will be held Wednesday, September 29th, 2021, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. A burial will occur at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa, Texas.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.